Hello, hello. You are listening to another episode of Inside the Tech Ecosystem, a podcast where we bring you fun and insightful topics on tech and its ecosystem in Nigeria and quite recently beyond. I'm your host, David Chuka, and I'm joined by my co-host, Emmanuel. Hey, man, what's up? What's good? How you doing? What's popping?
I'm all right. I don't know about what's popping, but I'm all right.
You're always all right. Like, where's the gossip? Where's the tea? Where's the hot stuff going on in your life? Come on.
Right now. I'm trying to adjust to living alone.
Oh, that's true. Emmanuel recently moved. He's a man of his own now. How's that been? How's your first
independent
night?
Independent, man.
Yeah.
My first night was crazy. I only set up my table. Of course, because as a tech bro, the workstation has to be set up. But my bed wasn't set up. Nothing else was set up. I basically slept with all my bags and luggages. And,
oh, wow.
It was crazy.
You get the hang of it. Well, today is not about Emmanuel's apartment. Today we have a superstar. You know, I'm actually quite impressed with the amount of superstars we've been getting on this podcast recently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have another superstar today joining us. His name is Dilo Megida, and he is technical writer, content creator, developer advocate. In fact,
Ati Bebelo.
Basically, whatever you need in the tech space, Dillion has got you covered. So I'm just going to let Dillion introduce himself, and you know, get into talking to Dillion. Hey, Dillion, what's good, man?
I'm doing very well. Name is Dillion Megida, and I feel like one major thing I can call myself is a content creator, because that encompasses what I do in developer advocacy, what I do in technical writing, videos and all that. So like the parent, whatever, is a content creator. And yeah, I love creating content, and I started creating content via articles, but now I do it. But now I also do videos, and opportunities like this also gives me room to do podcasts and sometimes virtual talks. I haven't done so much of conferences or speaking to people physically, but I've done a couple of virtual, do you say virtual speakings or virtual talks? Virtual talks.
I think both are fine.
Yeah. And I think it's nice to be on this space.
It's lovely to have you.
Yeah, that's nice. So how did you get into creating content, virtual talks? Basically, how did you get into tech?
How I got into tech is actually different from how I got into content creation. So do you want to hear the tech or the content creation one?
All right, let's hear tech first.
Well, I think for me, tech started from the university. I mean, I've always had a desktop at home, but I was only playing games, GTA. That was my favorite game. And when I got into university, I had a laptop. My dad got me a laptop. And with that laptop, I would usually still play Winning 11, PES. That's what I was using the laptop for. I think it was the second semester of my 100 level. And then somebody who I wouldn't necessarily say was established in tech, but had an idea of some of the things in tech. Just, I don't know how we even got into that conversation, but it just threw in this whole, like, you know, do you know you can create websites on your own laptop? And that actually caught my interest, because it's not something I have thought about deeply, but when it comes to websites, I used to think it's only established companies that can build websites. For example, if I need a website for my business, I have to go to maybe Google, I have to go to Microsoft and tell them, please, I need a website. How much should I pay? And then they do the website for me. So I think having that conversation where I realized I can actually create this website on my own laptop by myself, that caught my attention. And I think that was just how I got into the space. Of course, I started very slow. There was no direction. Today I'm doing something on HTML. Tomorrow I'm doing something on PHP. Next tomorrow I'm doing something somewhere else. I was just trying to learn everything. There was even a day I downloaded the 15 hours tutorial on PHP hacking or something. So I was just juggling all around with no specific direction. And I think it was from 20. So this was in 2017. Then it was in 2019 where things began to make sense and I began to focus on web development, learning the tools, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, all those frameworks. And I think it was from there I just found my direction, also able to establish myself in the tech space, became a lead to. I say lead to because I mean lead to, but I was beginning to have this lead to recognition on Twitter. People began knowing me that, oh, this person is in tech. And yeah, down the way, I then entered content creation. So content creation came later. Before, I was just playing around the tech space.
That's very nice.
That's very humble. Leave him. We know.
No. There was something that caught my attention. The fact that you saw a 15-hour video as a tutorial.
He watched the whole thing at once.
I definitely got bored. I got bored of it. I used to have a phase of tutorial, like correct tutorial hell. It was so bad that you would never see movies on my laptop. I even had to delete games so that I can have time for my tutorials. I deleted movies. When you carry my laptop, if you are looking for anything MP4, it's JavaScript, this web development. As it was 3 hours, there's one of 5 hours. I remember one of 6 hours. And I don't think it was easy to download stuff from YouTube that time, but I had this other website where I would just plug the URL, click download. So that was how I had all these tutorials. Some of them I didn't eventually watch. Some of them I got tired of. Some of them I just felt, why am I even watching this? I don't understand. I didn't finish that 15 hours tutorial, definitely.
You know what's crazy about tutorials is that, like, tutorials is a different industry on its own in tech. Like, you can make a living just producing tutorials. I think it's crazy. Like, some people are so comfortable with just watching tutorials. They don't want to do anything, right? They're like, as long as I watch my tutorials, I get my dopamine, I get my high, and I'm good. And, like, they do that for, like, such a long time. And then the people producing tutorials keep cashing out.
Yeah,
I think it's something I want to look into.
There was an era. There was an era that you just spoke about—the era of having those tutorials on your laptop locally and carrying them around. Yeah. So there was a time when there was a plug. There was a guy who had all the tutorials, and everybody would ask for. Today we just go online, search.
Yeah,
it's so crazy.
What's crazy is that I still have some not on my laptop, on a hard drive. I still have some tutorial, but like, because of the way technology moves very quickly, you can't keep a lot of these tutorials around because they'll become obsolete, right?
Yeah.
But I still have some that, it's not really changing. Basics of CSS is still basics of CSS. Whether it's 2005 or 2010, you get. So,
then maybe how I got into the content side, right?
Yeah. Tell us more about the content part of it. Today, we'd like to actually focus on your writing because you're quite popular for your writing. I mean, him and Quincy last year on a first name basis, they call each other from time to time. So we want to, learn more about how you got into technical writing.
Just a quick note. There was something that happened at my office, I think last week. I was trying to figure out a bug and I Googled something. And guess whose article was the number one on Google? I actually just blindly clicked it, opened it, and I saw the face because it was the week after we were both in Luxembourg, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know this guy. Like, that's amazing.
Oh, that's really nice.
I'd love to know what superstars in podcast.
I'd like to know what the title of the article was.
I think it was something about Node.js.
Well, how I got into the writing space was, like I said, in 2019, I began to have a better direction of what I was pursuing. I think from 2019, I reduced writing PHP. I was just focused on web development, JavaScript and all those things. So I think now from 2017 up until 2019, I only watch videos. Articles are boring for me. I prefer videos solely. So I think in 2019, I don't know exactly what inspired this, but there was just this, let me also learn from articles. Probably articles have more information than videos. I think what triggered it was I was looking for something and then I didn't find a video for it, but then there were articles for it. So after running away from those articles, I came back. So I found myself in 2019 starting to read articles, learn from articles. And what was now funny was these articles I was reading, some of them, of course, were by prolific authors or engineers, people who have been in this space for a long time. Then some of it was from like people that I'm seeing on Twitter every day. I'm like, is your article I'm reading that is helping me? Is this other person's article I'm reading that is helping me? One of these people was Bolaji. I don't know if any of you know Bolaji, but I'll read Bolaji's articles and I'll be like, Bolaji that I'm seeing on Twitter is his articles that I'm actually learning from. So I think I got to a point where I felt like if these people can share knowledge, I also want to share knowledge too, so that at least somebody will read it and be like, this article has blessed me. Just the way these people's articles are blessing me, I wanted other people to kind of learn from my articles. So that was just the inspiration where I went on DevTool, I already had a DevTool account because it was on DevTool. I was reading a couple of these articles. So I just went there and I was like, okay, I want to create my first article. I think on that day, I worked on this little CSS, or let's say I learned this little CSS hack. And I was like, okay, this is going to be my first article. No, actually, that was not my first article. My first article was one article where I wrote about, my name is Dillion, one day I'm going to be a, how do you say it? Like, I'm an aspiring developer. One day I know I'm going to be in a better place than now. So that was just what I wrote on Medium, more like an intro. But the first...
Is it still up?
It should still be up. It should still be up. I'll go read it. So I think, but the first technical article was the one where I explained this CSS thing that I just learned. And it was so brief because, I mean, I wasn't somebody who knew how to write articles. It was just so brief. I was like, I was working on this today. I wanted to achieve this. I learned about this CSS feature. This is the result. If you test it and it not work, then it's not my business, but it worked for me. This is the screenshot. Leave me alone. So that was how I started. And then it became a thing where I learned something new and I'm like, I want to write about it. I learned something new and write about it. So I think that was where the whole thing started. To be honest, I didn't even know people were making money from writing. Like, I had no idea. Me, I was just whatever I learn, I write. Until one day on DevTool, I saw somebody made a post that they are looking for technical writers that's on a contract, whatever. No, actually, before I saw that, like I said, I didn't know people used to make money. But because I was active on Twitter during that period, I'll see some people saying they are making dollars from technical writing, this, that, blah. I was not informed, though.
When did they make come a big?
That's exactly how I felt like. I was not informed. You see some people saying they make this. When you even convert it to Naira, you'll be hearing 100K, 500K. This same writing that I'm doing, nobody told me. So when I saw that job on DevTool, I was like, see opportunity. Then I reached out to the lady. Then we had the first article. Then they paid me $75. When I converted, it was like 30K. Yeah, 30K. I was like, me, big boy. Nobody should call my name any higher.
How much?
I'm balling.
How much suya did you buy that?
Sorry?
How much suya did you buy?
I forgot what I even spent that money on. But I know that I was like, I was even doing my internship that time. So I know there's this branch I used to always go and buy meat. I know I definitely passed that place that day. So I think this was later part of 2019. So that kind of shaped my approach to content creation to technical writing, where I was now writing article. Whenever I learn something, I write article. And if I see opportunities where I can also get paid for it, why not? Sometimes I still write during that time, sometimes I'll still write on my website. Sometimes I'll write for these organizations that can pay me. So I think that's how I got into this space and have been exploring this space so far.
That's nice. That's really nice.
So how would you describe your writing process?
People have asked me a lot about like writing process. And I know some people have like fixed format. where they're like, the intro should look like this, this should look like that, they should have this number of headings. I think for me, it depends on the articles. There are some articles that have more information or more sections than others. Some articles, I would even be struggling to put a heading. Once I've done the introduction and there's a conclusion, in the middle, it's like, what I want to share is straight to the point. There's no need to put two or three headings. And some other times you'd see like four or five headings. So how I approach writing is just give people a reason to read that article. That reason could be something like, are you having this bug? Do you know what this means in JavaScript? Do you know how to achieve something like this in CSS? Just give people a hook for them to read that article. Sometimes the hook works. Sometimes even when I read the hook afterwards, I'm like, unless somebody wants to read this article, this hook will not catch them.
So you try to like create a question that you want to answer with your
article. Exactly. That most of my articles are usually that whole intro question. Have you ever seen something like this? Have you ever thought about this? Blah, blah, blah. Are you experiencing this problem? Then after that, the rest of the article, like I said, depends on what the article is about. It could have multiple sections. But what I try to do with my articles is, and sometimes it's a lot of work, sometimes it's easier, but what I try to do is, as I don't want somebody reading my article to get lost at some point. Maybe I'm talking about some things in CSS and then I just throw something in like, I just throw one term, which is not very basic. I try not to do things like that. So if I would introduce that term, then there'll be a little paragraph or a couple of paragraphs where I explain what that term is. Or I could just give one sentence about what that term is, and then I put a reference either to an article I already have, if I do, or another article online that somebody can learn from. So that's how I approach writing. Like I take it like holding somebody's hand. From the beginning, they have read the intro, they are interested, then I kind of hold their hand until I get to the end. And in some points where I feel like, okay, this can be a roadblock, I try to make sure I clear off that roadblock. Like, this is what I mean. Sometimes too, it's like, you know, I want to write, and this is also what inspires me to have plenty articles, because sometimes I just want to write one article. I come to a roadblock and then I feel like one sentence, two sentences cannot do justice.
Requires another article.
Yeah. So I'm going to do another article. If I now have roadblock in that one, the gate, and I'll be like, I wanted to write this article, but now I've written three other articles before I had to finish this one. So that is how that is just how I personally approach it. Even when some people tell me to review their articles, these are the things I also look for. Like, okay, I don't know what DevOps is, but I'm reading your article. I come to this point and you just threw in this term from nowhere and you didn't say anything about it. Unless your articles is towards senior engineers who should already understand something like this, then you wouldn't have to worry about explaining everything. But if it's to people like me who have no idea or juniors, then you want to ensure that you clarify these things. So, yeah, that's how I take them through. Then for the conclusion, sometimes I just put conclusion to fulfill all righteousness. So it's like, conclusion does not fit. It's like, just say what you want to say and go. Which one is... So I've already... it's just making the article
extra longer. I hope I've been able
longer.
To confuse you and not convince...
So with conclusions, sometimes I do it to fulfill all righteousness. Sometimes it has a valid relevance just to kind of summarize everything that I have covered and also give people like a next step. Okay, you have read this. You may want to continue here. And some other times when it's just difficult, I just leave the conclusion and I just write, thanks for reading. Now, why emoji finish? It's not something fixed.
I was going to ask you how you come up with ideas, but you already gave one of your secrets. Do you have more secrets? One of your secrets being, like, while you're writing one article, you get to a roadblock and then you have an idea to write more. So apart from that, are there other sources of inspiration that gives you these ideas?
I have a bunch of resources. I have a bunch of sources. In fact, just from this conversation like this, I can already think of an article idea, like how my articles inspire my other articles. And that is already a writing idea. And then I talk about this how like I'm writing a particular article. I come to
that's deep, bro.
Yeah. You know, to be honest, that's how it actually works for me. It's like from the random mess of things, I just pick something and I immediately run to my Notion because I have a Notion board where I manage my content ideas, even videos. I just run there, throw the idea there. If it's something that I want to do immediately, I also have a priority column where I specify like one or I specify like five. So if it's something I feel like I want to write this article tomorrow, I'll put the priority as one. So by tomorrow, if I'm thinking of what I can write about, if I go to that Notion board, I can see it. So from things like this, I get my my idea. Sometimes it could be a conversation on maybe Twitter. Some people are talking, some people are arguing about React and Vue, which one is better. For me, I can just pick an inspiration from there, like, let me work on an article that shows Vue, a comparison between React and Vue. And that is it. Like, there are some of my articles where I never thought of it. I saw a conversation on Twitter. I allowed them to do their fighting arguments, who is right, who is wrong. I just feel like, okay, I'm going to write on this. Then when I'm done, if it is a safe space, I'll go and throw my article in the trash. Like, but if it's not a safe space, let them not drag me too. I'll just
never safe on Twitter.
Dragging has never killed anybody, bro.
I'll just share it like alone instead of throwing it there. But yeah, that's how it is. Sometimes also somebody asks me a question. This used to happen before where one person asked me a particular question. I answer them and that person would ask me that same question. And I'd be like, I'll now have to type this thing again. Why not just make it an article? Now that's how it used to be before where maybe two or three people would ask me before I actually write an article. But now if one person asks me, it's already, I need to write it down in case somebody else would ask me. Even if nobody asks me, this may be a question that nobody's thinking about right now. But if I share this article, then they'll feel like, oh, that's true. I never thought of this. And then they pick it up. Mm. So it's nice. I literally draw from everywhere. Even Luxembourg that we went to, there were already so many ideas I have. Like, you know, places you can visit in Luxembourg, make that one video. Luxembourg is full of high bridges. Make that one another video. This, that, I can pick like 20 ideas from everything that happened in Luxembourg. So whenever I want to write article, I already have things to, I already have my Notion, but there are still over 50 articles that I haven't touched yet. Some of them have even been there for months now. And I'm like, one day, I would write you. I have one other day, priorities day. Now.
Like our side projects. One day. Yeah. You talked about, you know, reviewing some people's articles. And I wanted to know if you do that a lot. And maybe if people reach out to you to review their articles and maybe, you know, you get paid for that or you just do it out of the goodness of your heart.
I just do it out of the goodness of my heart. But again, because there is no money to ginger me, you have to bear with my response rate.
Okay. So no, that's fair.
I try not to throw myself into such commitment. I try to, like, if I see there's somebody who probably reaches out to me for writing advice and everything, I can just privately tell them, when you are done with this article, when you're done with your first article, feel free to reach out. Mm. It's easier for me. I remember one day where I tweet publicly, hey, I'm doing a giveaway. I did giveaway for, I think, 5 people or 10 people. That was financially. Then I was like, I'm also going to review 10 people's articles. Oh my God. When those 10 people sent their articles, I was like, No, when they sent their articles, I wasn't overwhelmed yet. It was when I went through the first person's article and saw how many things I had to point out, how many screenshots I had to take because it wasn't on Google Docs. So I had to like take screenshots, bring it to Twitter and be like, this, that. After I did it for the first person, for the second person, I was like, what did I commit myself into? I know there was one person that I later reviewed his article like 3 or 4 months later. In fact, the person already published the article and say, whenever you review it, if I need to edit it, I'll edit it. I can't wait for you anymore. So I try not to do that unless I have the bandwidth. But usually I do this through like privately, like just reach out to people. But I mean, I always give room for people to reach, to ask for feedback. It's just, yeah, my response may not be as soon as you would expect, especially if I didn't directly ask you for it. But I always sometimes come to Twitter, try to clear off my DMs, respond to some people. What I also tell them now is before they bring it to me, transfer it to Google Docs so that it will be easier for both of us. If you leave it on somewhere else, you are giving me more work. And yeah, that would even discourage me from wanting to take a look.
Yeah.
And how do you receive feedback for your articles? So when you write, you come up with an idea, you start writing, do you have like a small group of people that you share like a preview before you publish like to the internet?
For my personal articles, I push directly to master. If anybody catches any error or any feedback, like recently somebody reached out to me and spotted a typo error, it's something I can always fix and push to master again. The only time I go through preview systems is if I'm working for an organization, because it's the organization, they have their own rules, they have their own guidelines, so I cannot skip that process.
Yeah,
that's the only time I go through reviews. Sorry, I was saying previews. Preview, review, anyone. Yeah, but for my personal articles, once I'm done with the article, I go through Grammarly, spot any typo or grammar error, read it again, see if it makes sense. I push directly to master. In the next 10 minutes, it's live. Anybody that catches error, give me the error. I push again to master.
And do you cross post, or like you post one article per platform, or like you try to spread every article you write on all platforms?
Initially, I was doing that, but I think it got draining for me at some point. Like before, I would post an article on my website, then I'll put on DevTo, add a canonical link to say the original is my website, add for DevTo, Hashnode, sometimes Medium. I think it just came to a point where it just became tiring. And I think also for me, it's kind of, there's this personal thing that I struggle with mentally, where if you see my profile, wherever you see my profile, I want you to see new stuff. So I don't want it to be like you come to my website and then you go to my Hashnode and go to my DevTo and it's the same thing. So I feel like I'm building audiences across different platforms. So I want to try as much as possible to serve them differently. Mm-hmm. So even if I make a particular content here, I'm going to make it on this other place, it should be a little bit different. Not like somebody comes here, same thing, goes there, same thing, and then they no longer value that other place because they feel like this is the original.
I suspect there might be like a tool that you can use, like cross-post. Like, so you put on one source and then it's somehow, I don't know how, it publishes everywhere.
To be honest, there is not. I once tried doing something like that with Hashnode, playing with their APIs and seeing if I can... It was just so much work for me. It's just one of those projects that, you know, if you check your Git repositories, you see it somewhere. But if you check the last updated date, to be like 2 years ago. But I know I was trying to work on something like that, but I gave up on it. Again, it's just, I want to serve the different audiences I have.
Yeah, that's fair to me, really.
Differently. I think that's fair. Not necessarily differently. I mean, even when it comes to videos, I still cross-post, but like for me, if I make a video on YouTube, if I want to share it on TikTok, I don't want you to have that whole horizontal view. I want you to have a vertical view. So I still try to like reuse the same content for TikTok.
Edit it to fit.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't just want it to be like you go on TikTok, you go on YouTube, same thing. No.
Okay. So how much content do you think you've published so far? Since you started writing?
Well, I have, is this like articles or all the contents I've created?
I know, if you do all the contents, we'll not leave here today. So let's just say articles. Let's just say like...
So I have a page on my website, billionmegida.com/contents. Mm. Okay. And there, I'm able to collate all the contents. It's actually outdated now. I think in the last 2 or 3 months, I haven't updated it. But there, on that page, if you click on post, currently shows that I've written over 269 public articles.
Oh, wow.
And I say public because there are some articles I've written for private organizations. And
that's a lot.
It never got live.
Yo.
Yo, that's very
Articles I've written.
I'm currently on the website and I'm like,
what? Yeah.
I mean, I've written as a ghostwriter before. So one thing with ghostwriting is, you know, you write, they pay you. That's it. Oh yeah, be going. Nobody, like, there's one day I saw one of my articles that I wrote on one platform. I saw it, I was like, ah, nobody will know the one that wrote this article and see this article shining here. So apart from all those private ones, this is an outdated number of how many articles I've written publicly. This is across my website and other organizations.
That's nice. You know something that's actually quite popular about you? I don't know if you've noticed, but when you type Trillion Megida.
Oh, on Google. I know that one.
I think cover letter gets appended, like, by default. So you blew up one time on Twitter. It's not, I don't want to say blew up, but like, it was, I mean, you got, it was kind of popular, that tweet.
Yeah.
So apparently Dillion has this cover letter template that has helped millions of Nigerians get jobs.
Wow.
Nice. I wouldn't necessarily say get jobs, but get interviews.
Yeah, get interviews. Yeah. It may not be millions, awesome. But we're hyping Dillion on this podcast. So yeah. Let's say millions. About 200 million Nigerians have
used. Yeah.
So it's actually crazy. You, when you're typing Dillion Megida on Google, there's an autocomplete cover letter on it. Like,
yeah.
So like, people can have, you tell us more about that, you know?
In a lot.
Yeah. How did that happen? Because, you know, funny enough, I actually followed the template. I didn't really use it like that because I think I had my own template style, which felt more natural to me, but it was pretty good, right? So, I mean, how did that, you know, come to pass, like, you know, come to be and whatnot? Yeah.
You know, it's so funny because some people who have used this template, when they show me a screenshot, I'm like, change some things now. See, I just carry everything. But I mean, there was this template that I had this Google Docs where whenever I was applying for jobs, I mean, of course, you know the whole thing with applying for jobs. So I have this template where I just have like square brackets and I'm like here, put in the role, here this, here that. And it got improved over time. It got to a point where whenever I see a space for cover letter, I just go copy that template, paste the template, then I refine it, filling in the blanks and then changing some words. Because even if it's my template, I don't want it to be like the same every time. So I remember one of my friends reached out to me and asked, like, you know, he's trying to construct the cover letter. Do I have any tips? And as at then, it wasn't even a template per se. I just kind of copied one of the cover letter that I had sent and give to him, like, you know, you change whatever you need to change, make your research, fill in the right information. And another person too, during that period, reached out about cover letter, and then I shared that with them. And it was so surprising because they came back and the excitement about the fact that they got their first interview, like, it has always been hard getting interviews.
Yeah.
But they actually got an interview. I was like, okay, is it the cover letter that did it, or is it maybe just luck on your side?
You have to do more experiments.
And then this other person who I shared it with was like, oh, they got an interview too. And you, like, you see this excitement. Maybe they over exaggerate, I don't know. But you just see this excitement where I don't usually get interviews, and for the first time I got an interview, and I'm like, okay. Then that was how I just made an article off of it, and then I and then I made it a template. Then I shared it on Twitter. And then, you know, I kind of share, like, this is the testimony of two people. I also specified the idea that don't use it exactly. Restructure it.
Change something.
Exactly. It even came to a point where I was not scared of using my template because I feel like everybody have used it.
People will know you're
like, this is a template. I've seen it before.
Okay.
So I think when I shared it, then a couple of people, you know, would reach out to me and tell me, oh, they got their first interview. Honestly, at least for the people who publicly told me, no, not publicly, for the people who told me, because there were some who never told me, but for the people who told me, only a couple of them, only a certain percentage of them actually got the job at the end.
Yeah.
But you could just see this excitement, like, you know, they got into interviews and I'm like, oh, okay, that's nice. And then I even made a video version after some point. So yeah, that was how everything happened. There are still few people who use it today. Like, there was this person who followed me on LinkedIn because she was like, she was applying for a job. She was now asking for cover letter. They now referred Dilio Megida. That was how she now found me. And I was like, hey, cover letter is doing wonders wherever. So, but the thing about the cover letter is, it's not necessarily the cover letter itself. It's just some of the information that you wouldn't naturally provide. That cover letter structure ensures that you provide
that, yeah.
Sometimes you just go straight to the point, say, okay, I want to be for this job, yeah. This, that. The cover letter is just able to say, specify why you are a good fit,
yeah.
Specify the skills that you have.
Yeah.
All of the, so once you fill all of those blanks, by highlighting all those things, then you stand a better, or you yeah. give a better impression. So it wasn't the cover letter itself. It was just more of the structure.
Yeah.
But yeah, during that season, I was quite popular for...
I'll be very honest. Like, sometimes I really detest cover letters. Like, I've crafted some of the most impressive cover letters before, and I did not get a call back. Like,
you didn't use the template.
That's true. And that was my mistake. From now on, I'm going to use Delia's technique. But like, you know, there's some cover letters I really put my heart and soul inside. In fact, I'll tell them, your founder was born in 1968. I was there when, and then I just never hear anything back. And it really pisses me off. Like, why did I even spend so much time? Like, yeah. And it's not like they sent a rejection. Like, they just don't get back
to me. They did not even tell you anything.
No, that's worse. That's definitely worse.
But the fact is that like a lot of people actually don't know these things. Like, they don't know about how they can actually structure their cover letters.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are surrounded by people who already know, so we have the impression that this stuff is not new stuff, right? So why is somebody really like screaming that I got a job, an interview? But there's a host of people that have no clue how this thing works. So it's good that you know created something that is permanently on the internet that people can always access. So
Me also, I don't like writing cover letters, but I see cover letters that, you know, is the first thing they will read before they will open my resume. So I need to impress them. If I don't impress them, they'll just delete my email. Once they enter their inbox, they'll just delete it. So I feel like cover letter is just that space where I can be like, please read what I have to say.
Cover letters that actually get me interviews, right? I always tend to restructure them for other jobs, right? The ones that get me interviews, I make sure that, okay, this one got me an interview. What did I write in? Because I've written multiple cover letters from multiple companies.
Yeah.
Right. So the ones that make them call me back, I'm like, okay, what did I put here that I've not put in other places? And then I just use that. But I mean, Dillion's template is something everyone should look at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dillion, how do you say someone today, let's say, just imagine someone who just finished school or someone maybe in school, listens to this episode and it's like, yeah, I really like Dillion's story. This looks like something I want to do. What would you tell them to do? And what would be different about what you tell them to do that you didn't do, for example? Are there any things you omit out of your own journey? Or are there things that you also add to your journey that you think would really help someone who is starting today, for example?
Anybody, they should go and make sacrifice. This tech is not easy. They should go and make sacrifice first before they enter.
My God.
But this question you're asking, is it in like tech generally or more?
No, for technical writing. Because technical writing seems like something people just fall into by mistake. It's not like they aspire from the beginning.
Mm.
It's like something that happens along the way.
I think I got into technical writing by mistake too. Because I also write, so I mean...
It's okay. It's not about you.
Oh my God. Manu, can you calm down?
I think for me, if it is tech, there are definitely things I would omit. But if it is technical writing, I wouldn't necessarily omit anything. But one thing I like whenever I think about my writing journey, one of the things I'm excited about is I started when I didn't even know they were making money out of it. So I was able to do this thing because I wanted to share knowledge. If I had known that there was money from the beginning, maybe my direction would have shifted in one way. But I had no idea. I thought technical writing was that thing where you're only being paid as a software engineer. Technical writing is just something you do on the side. Finish. So I think that was one thing that really helped me, because it was able to shape my passion for technical writing. Like, even till now that I cannot even write for these organizations that I used to write for. Some organizations will pay me $100, some will pay me $300. Ah, the organization that paid me $500 one day, ah, one crazy. Ah, see. No. That one was not, so $500 here, it's okay, I had already relocated here. But the first time a company paid me $350, when I converted that money and it was like $150,000. I told my sister that stop calling me uncle. Don't call me by my name anymore. So if I knew there was money in this thing from the beginning, it would have definitely shaped me one way, no matter how I may try to want to say it's a lie. But right now, I still write articles for free on my platform, on some other platforms, because for me, technical writing has never been about the money. Even when I discovered there was money in it, I was like, okay, now I can make that extra. But even when I don't make that extra, I still write. So comparing my time then to nowadays, it's like, for people who want to get into technical writing, you'd see them, they push one article, two article, and they're like, Junior, how can I make money from this thing? It's not wrong to want to make an income out of this, but now you're neglecting that part of growing. You're neglecting that part of making this a skill. You're neglecting that part of being consistent with this. You're neglecting that part of, you know, being good at writing, being good at expressing yourself. If you compare the articles I write today and the articles I write before, you would see a huge difference in how I express myself. I don't even use big grammar, but you see that difference. If it's before, if I want to explain what a computer is, straight to the point. This is what the computer is. This is a picture of it. Bye. But now if I want to explain what the computer is, I would express myself to the point where I even explain why a computer is even needed nowadays, the different type of computers that we have. So people neglect that part of actually growing, knowing how to express themselves better, and they're only focusing on the finance part. So it's quite cliche. A big cliche, as it is to say it. It's quite cliche. To say, don't get into tech for the money, don't get into technical writing for the money. But these things are not just said because we don't want you to make money. It's just because money, if money is your drive, you'll be frustrated. If money was my drive for technical writing, I know times where a particular organization, I will send them 10 ideas. I will even send them outline. And this article, this is the outline, these are the things I want to talk about. I will send them 10. They'll tell me, they don't see any value in these 10 articles. I should go and suggest more.
Ah.
I will suggest 5. Okay, this, that. Do not tell me. In this particular one, how is it different from this one that I found on Google? I will not have to convince them that, see what is on Google. See what I put in outline. It's different. Okay, go on. So if it was all about money, those times would have definitely discouraged me. Like, I'm not even writing this article again. So I wouldn't necessarily change anything from my side, but I'll just say people should, when it comes to technical writing, people should focus on that growing part. That growth part. The money comes. There are people who are cashing out.
The money comes.
Some people will say they make 10K from article. I'll be like, same articles that I was writing, I not see 10K. You are writing, you are seeing 10K. God, when? So people are definitely cashing out right now, but just don't forget that part of growth. And another thing I tell people too is they usually feel like, you know, they have to be very good at JavaScript before they start teaching JavaScript. Mama, when will you ever be good in JavaScript? Let's ask ourselves that. Like, when will you ever be good in JavaScript? So I do tell people that just the way I started, just I learned one small thing in CSS. I share that thing. I don't try to put myself online as I know CSS more than everybody in the world. No. But I learned this particular thing from my experience. I share it. I'm very careful to add these things from my experience. So if it did not work for you, it's from my experience. That's what I used to do at the beginning, always adding that personal side of it. So people shouldn't have to wait till they are very good. They should just start from somewhere. And then they come to a point where they're now professional writers, they're professional engineers, and they can easily express themselves. And there are several opportunities to make money out of writing, definitely. But yeah, that was just advice and people. And again, when it comes to should I write on my website, when the question is when will you finish building your website? that's the next question. When will you finish building your website? I started from dev though. I wrote on Medium for some time. I wrote on Hashnode. Even when I made the first version of my website, I said, okay, let me start writing on my website. The process of writing was so bad that it felt like every page that I write was as if I was creating a website. So if I want to put header, I will use H1 tag. If I want to put paragraph, I'll put P tag. And then when I compare the experience I had there with DevTo, on DevTo, I just write Markdown. I go straight to the content. But this one, I'm basically building a website because of one article. So I had to run back to DevTo. Until my website is better, I'll just be writing here. Then until I discovered tools and all those things, and now I can write on Markdown on my website. Now I enjoy writing on my website. So people, when it comes to starting, people should just pick any platform, start pouring their thoughts, start pouring their knowledge. If they ever want to write on their website, that's fine. If they forever want to write on these platforms, that's also fine. So I think based on my experience, and especially with the current situation of things, I think this is what I want to share for anybody who wants to get started or who has started already.
That's wonderful. I have this equation. I think I've talked to Chika about it, about like the distribution of like junior software engineers compared to senior engineers. So imagine a world where we have 100 engineers that enter this world every year, right?
Yeah.
The first year, there are 100 junior engineers. Second year, there are 100 one-year junior engineers and 100 two-year junior engineers. In 5 years' time, there will only be 100 senior devs, but there will be at least 400 junior devs. So it means if you write for junior engineers, you have a lot more audience, for example.
Yeah.
If you write for only seniors, you're only writing for a very, very select few, right?
Yeah.
You're writing for 100 people out of 500 people. So it's good that people who are still learning are writing articles because their impact is much higher than writing for like the
senior
people who already probably know what
exactly writing,
you know. So
you know, you see stuff. Somebody make an article on what is HTML and put it on Twitter, they will drag that person. What are you still teaching in HTML? But what you don't realize is there are people who are still new in tech who don't know what HTML is. Like there was somebody who shared an article on what is HTML DOM last year. That article got so much engagement. People were like, oh, thank you for this. This is really simplified. This is that. If you say a topic like this is not relevant anymore because you feel like everybody knows it, that is completely false. You're only thinking from the senior engineer side. Let's say I even want to learn Go. I currently don't know how to write Go. The most basic article that somebody writes about Go will be super helpful for me because I don't even know anything in Go.
Yeah.
But if you start thinking of it like everybody knows Go, that is false. So this equation, Abi, how did you say you will not call it a law?
I think it was, I don't remember who, but like there was someone who said it either from a podcast or a conversation I have with someone.
You know,
but yeah. So we all know that right now AI, ChatGPT, and all these things are very popular topics, and of course we have to talk about it because one of the first innovations was around like AI helping you generate ideas and possibly even writing your whole article for you.
Yeah.
I've used Notion AI, I've used ChatGPT, but more of Notion AI, and I'm blown away by like the capabilities, right? So what do you think of these AI tools? Like, are they going to enhance writing for humans, or they might eliminate some human writers? What are your thoughts?
Well, so if you are not careful, they will eliminate you as a writer.
If not, eliminate us, so please.
You know, funny enough, I made a video yesterday on YouTube where I shared my thoughts still related to this about AI. For me, I've been hesitant on trying out AI. I think that hesitance was probably coming from a place of fear, from a place of, like, yesterday was the first time I used Notion AI. Oh, I typed one simple question. When I saw the answer, I deleted it. I was like, how will you give me this kind of amazing answer? Like, I nearly deleted it and I didn't use Notion AI again. So
you should, bro.
Yeah, exactly. So I've come from a place of being scared to use it. Of course, another reason why I don't like, or let me see, I didn't use to, I never wanted to use it was, I didn't want something that I cannot fact check. I didn't want something where it just gives me an answer and I just take it at face value. So I think my problem has always been like, I want to be more in control, being able to spot this answer is wrong, this answer is right, this is that. So that's why I didn't want to use it. But now I just created an account on OpenAI, I think last week. I don't know where to see the Chat GPT-3.
chat.openai.com, the URL for that.
It's even AI.com and it can redirect it there.
Okay. Yes, I'll go and check. So I just recently started jumping on these things. And the reason I'm jumping on it is not even because of productivity. It's because I don't want AI to innovate and leave me behind. It did not take my job.
That's fair.
So coming down to technical writing, I have seen, especially from people, because I haven't explored this myself, that there are several ways this thing can improve your productivity. There are several ways AI can improve your productivity, at least giving you a starting point, give you an idea. Like I mentioned in the video I published yesterday, I said with the way AI is advancing, it's important to be able to put yourself at a point where AI should not be able to do 100% of what you can do. If AI will at all be introduced in your company or wherever, it should be able to do like 50, 60%. It should not be able to do everything. Yeah. So now I put myself in a point where, as a content creator, if AI keeps evolving, I will just switch from developer advocacy, enter content creation full time. Then you now start seeing me making videos on, here is how you can use AI to improve your life. Here is how you can use AI to do it. Like, I will make sure that I'm at the point where AI should not replace me. I still remain valuable. I still remain relevant. This is how you can use AI to get a job. This is how you can use, that is the point that I mean, this feels like a joke, but I want to be in that point where even with the whole involvement, I still stay relevant. So definitely it's useful. I think another reason why I don't even want to use AI to write my articles is because I have my personal tune when I write my articles. If AI writes an article for me, I would have to refine and refine and refine to get back my personal tune. So instead of using AI to write an article for me, I want to use AI to generate outlines for my article. Like, you know, if I want to write an article about this AI, what are the important things that I should cover? That is how I want to use AI for myself. So I think it's also important that while we use these tools, we should be able to find how it can help us. The way it helps me might be different from the way it helps another person. Find how it can be able to help us. But again, it's important to have fundamental knowledge of what AI is telling you about. I feel like AI should do things easier for you, or should I say do things faster for you, not necessarily doing things that you do not know for yourself.
Yeah.
Like somebody, I mentioned one question recently on regular expressions, and the person was saying, oh, ask ChatGPT. Yes, it will give me the answer, but did I understand the regular expression itself? Or I just want to copy paste. So yeah, I think with technical writers, or even with content creators generally, we have to put ourselves at a point where if AI takes our writing job, we should be able to fulfill the reviewing part. Like I recently got this opportunity, which I rejected, where the person was like, AI is going to write in these articles, but we need you to review it. We need you to, you know, provide the relevant screenshots, modify the illustrations, provide code blocks, create a GitHub repository and save those code there, have an app that is, you know, running, a demo app. So you can see that even if AI is doing the writing part, I'm still relevant because I can review it and I can provide the extra details. So I think as technical writers, we need to not just know how to write, but know how to teach so that when AI is not teaching well, we can provide value in, should I say.
Why do you reject the opportunity?
Because the person not rate me. The money I saw there.
They're pricing you.
The money I saw there was the money I saw there felt like AI is doing 95%. Everything. I'm only doing 5%. When the person's not going into detail, I was like, what they are giving me now. And I mean, aside that too, as a developer advocate and in some companies and their terms and conditions, you just have to turn down other opportunities because it breaks the contract. Unless you want to hide and do it, but for me, it's just stress hiding. Even I'm writing for free already, so turning down some of these things can be easy for me, unless the money is, you know, very, very cash.
You know what? Talk to us about, you know, your role in developer advocacy. Like, I know that your role in tech has evolved over the years, and
I'm writing Python now.
imagine. And I told Emmanuel this the other day when he was talking about, we're talking about people in tech that tend to wear many hats. And for me, I personally think developer advocates is actually, they're actually one of those people, right? You can do literally, in fact, they can call you to do anything at any point.
Actually,
right? Because you're basically a mediator between the people using the product, the developers using the product, and then your team building the product, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, dev advocates tend to like do a lot of things. So I know you started out as a software engineer at some point, you know, some technical writing and developer advocacy. So tell us, you know, what steps and what actions did you take to make these happen, right? So,
well, to be very honest, what I do as a developer advocate now is different from what I mentioned I will be doing as a developer advocate in my life.
Oh, wow.
In my previous role as a developer advocate, I was doing the normal developer advocate, which is a mediator between the company and the customers. Yeah. But now I'm doing something different. So at my previous role, I was doing things like demos. So I could create a demo, put it on a repository, show, this is how to use our tool to build the next Twitter. This is how to use our tool to build the next Facebook. If you're having this particular error in our tool, this is what the error means. This is how to resolve it. This is how to save money while you use our tool. So I was doing all of these things in form of demos, in form of articles, content creation, which was what I envisioned for developer advocacy. But now I'm doing developer advocacy internally, which means my customers are the developers in the company.
Okay.
So it's quite a different shift where nobody outside would even know what I do now. Nobody outside would see my articles or see whatever videos I make. Everything is internal. But currently, I haven't been creating content. It's not bad, but I have not been creating content. That's the thing.
Okay.
So especially with internal developer advocate, it's like, it's not just content you have to create. You have to think of ways to make the engineering experience internally better, more effective. If this is articles, fine. But for me, with the problems I have discovered, the solution for me right now is not writing articles. If I'm writing articles, it's just because I want to. But that is not a solution, right? That is not the problem right now. It's a problem that I might tackle later, but there are more
Issues right now.
Prioritize, exactly. There are more issues right now. So some of the issues that we have internally now, recently I was writing bash script. I wrote this whole bash script where I had like 20 Stack Overflow tabs open. Literally every line that I write. Every single line, Stack Overflow. How can you create a file with bash script? If I do this, how can you do if else? So bash script was so, bash script is not readable. So it came to a point where whenever I wanted to make a change, I'll have to open 20 tabs again to be like, Stack Overflow, what was I doing on line 20? What was I doing on line 21? So now I came to a point where I wanted to expand this whole script and I was like, see, let me not lie for myself. This is not working. So I now had to change it to Python. And Python is not something I used to know before. So I now had to like learn Python and then transform the whole script to Python. And now it's easier because Python is readable. When I go to line 20, I'm like, I know what I was doing here. Yeah. It's just to do this and that. So right now I'm tackling other issues, of course, with the end goal of still improving the internal engineering experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I'm doing more of coding than I've been coding as a developer advocate before. Yeah. So it's quite different. But again, it's still my whole content creation experience, content creation approach, knowing how a standard, like, this can be more subjective, but knowing how a standard article looks like, how a standard documentation looks like, it's still all of those experience that I am using to build these tools and processes internally. So it's still, but developer advocacy externally, you find people doing content creation and all those things.
More. Yeah. You know what's funny? I think many people actually need to hear this because as a developer advocate, sometimes you just, I think some people just let themselves go and they kind of forget that, you know, look, we hired you because you're a developer.
Yeah.
And you can advocate for this product. Right? Because now you're in a position where you have to write more code than you were writing before in your previous developer advocate role. And for people that, you know, they have become so comfortable with not writing code and just writing demos, because truth be told, demos and actual, you know, building
it's
stuff.
Different though.
I can tell you.
When I was doing demos in my previous company, some of these things were not even like best practice. It was just
it works. And everybody's like, oh, it works. You know?
Yeah. So
it's just something to think about. And I'm actually curious about your content creation. You know, I follow you on YouTube. I follow you on TikTok.
Thank you.
I follow you on Twitter. I think the only thing I don't follow you on is Instagram because I don't use Instagram. So there's no point. But, you know, blogs, you know, you're a guest author on some of these platforms. I think you're a staff writer on Quick Code Camp.
Free Code Camp.
Yeah, I said quick. Free Code Camp. My bad. And it's actually quite interesting. Like, Dillion is a big deal on Free Code Camp. I think he met with Quincy Larson recently.
I saw Quincy last week. Oh my God.
How was that experience, by the way? I want to know.
Bro, this man talked about like businesses, managing a non-profit and more. You know, in that moment, I was, because I had to rush somewhere else. I was like, why do I have to rush somewhere else? I wish I can
stay. You should have canceled, bro.
Longer. It wasn't something cancelable. It was not a date, by the way, but it was cancelable.
It should have been a date.
But it was just so nice hearing him speak. You know, he talked about things like, you know, even as a non-profit, like there was one thing he mentioned, which I believe I can share publicly. He mentioned something about, you know, even as a non-profit, if you do not have money saved somewhere, if you crash, nobody will come and say, oh, you are a church, oh, you are a mosque, oh, you are helping people code, let's help you and stand up. Like, everybody will just move on. So it was
and
really
it's crazy
nice.
It's crazy how long he has managed Free Code Camp.
Exactly.
How long has Free Code Camp been going on, please?
Yeah, Free Code Camp
more
has not
than
even
7 years,
been as... Yeah, it hasn't even been as long as all of these W3 schools, all of these things, but... He has really managed and sustained it.
No.
So it was
I get an email from Quincy Larson almost every week.
Yeah.
Quincy Larson is always in my inbox. Always.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really nice. It was really nice seeing him in person, hearing him speak. It's super nice.
So how do you manage all these things? Because, bro, every time I open TikTok, Dillion's video is one of the first videos that is on my For You page. And then on YouTube, I get notifications, Dillion Megida uploaded a YouTube short or something like that. So like, you know, how has that been for you with your full-time job? Because me personally, sometimes I make technical content where I make videos, right? And stuff. But that is only when, okay, I am bored. But, you know, I think you're doing TikTok as it's somehow like a priority for you because, you know, you get engagements from time to time. I don't know if you're looking to make money from it as well, you know?
So I think for my content creation efforts, long term, I hope I get to a point where I can make money from it because I think one of my goals is software engineering is not something I want to do forever. I feel like I want to come to a point where I can do content creation and it can feed me.
I think I've heard you talk about that before.
Right now, content creation cannot feed me. If I leave my job, I will perish. So I'm really hoping that in the next couple of years, I can come to a point where my content creation and maybe investments that I have is feeding me and I don't have to rely on a full-time job. But when people ask me this question of how do I balance all of these things, I tell them that on the outside, it might look like I'm doing a lot. How do I have time for all these things? But the truth is, a couple of things in my life are affected. Like, I'm currently in a new apartment. This is my third month in this new apartment. I said I will go to the gym that they force us to pay in our house rent. You cannot avoid it. I have not yet found the time to go to a gym. The gym, if I come down, is just like 2 minutes walk. But I have not found time. I mean, there are other reasons why I haven't gone to the gym, of course. But it's like some of the things in my life are affected because I have time for these other things. And it's even now, it's even this year that I even became, you know, I began to reduce some of these things. Like TikTok, I'm not even putting as much effort as I used to anymore. My Instagram, I grew up until 14.5K followers. Now, after like 2 weeks, you see 14.4K. After another 2 weeks, you see 14.3K. I'll just say it is well. I'm sorry, I don't have time. So it's now I'm even reducing it. But at the same time, a couple of things are affected where I'm not able to prioritize other things. I have this piano subscription where, like, an app that teaches me how to play piano. The reason why I started doing the piano yesterday was because recently they tried to, you know, auto-debit me. I did not have money, so the thing did not work. Then I now do small credit alert. Too. Let me go and buy something. I see my money is not complete again. Why? The piano people have carried the money. So I just felt like I'm paying for this thing. I have to.
And you're not using it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I had to just use it last night. I was like, okay, this money can always. So there are a couple of things that I'm not able to do because I do these things.
Mm.
And so that's my answer to the question of how am I able to sort of. Of course, it also involves time management.
Yeah.
Another thing I notice whenever I want to play games, 2 hours is dozens to work.
Mm.
Is when they have beat me and beat me. Like I'm playing football, when they have beat me and beat me, I'll be like, oh, don't do. That is now where I'll now go back and be like, okay, what else can I do with my life? Yeah. But now I'm trying to manage my time better where I'm like, okay, 1 hour, maybe 1 hour, 15 minutes. That's what it will later happen. But I say 2 hours, like today I was playing, I was supposed to do 1 hour, 30 minutes. I entered 2 hours. I still wanted to go on, but somebody flogged me the first time, flogged me the second time. I was like, this is the sign. Just leave here. So it also involves a bit of time management too, knowing when to withdraw myself from other activities so I can have time for this. Because especially with YouTube, I'm really in this phase where I want to keep growing. With Twitter, I'm not even very bothered about growing, but I think YouTube is my priority right now. TikTok, I'm also trying to push effort there. But honestly, it's even better than before. Before, I was pushing like 3 videos on TikTok every day, like back to back. But now I've drew myself from all of those things. But the answer to your question is just, I'm able to do all of these things because I'm not able to do some other things.
Some other things. Yeah. That makes sense. So we're coming to the end of this episode, actually. And we usually like to have some fun with our guests. So I'm going to ask you, a very personal
question. Involve money.
There's no money involved, Julian. We're sorry. We can't pay you. You know, we can't pay you on this podcast. So I'm going to ask you some personal questions just to see where your mind is at.
Chad, don't ask me if I'm single.
No. Over personal, just tiny personal, not over personal. So tell us your best content creation platform or tool. And your worst content creation platform or tool, and why? And the next thing is best writing tool and worst writing tool or platform, and why? So those two parts of the question.
Best content creation platform is YouTube.
YouTube.
Because I feel like there is, in the long term, I would really benefit from it. Not just in money. I'm really looking forward to when I'll start be able to make money from those ads. But not just that, but also like I feel like I'm building this recognition, I'm building this profile.
That's important. So
that's a platform. For tool, my microphone.
Your worst content creation, like you said, YouTube is your best. So what's your worst?
Oh, I thought it's like platform and tool. I can just do anyone.
Let's do platform. Let's just do platform.
Okay, platform. Okay. Worst is at the moment, At the moment, I feel like it's TikTok. But that's because of a personal beef I have with TikTok.
Okay.
I took like 2 months break from TikTok, and TikTok is now doing as if it not know me again.
Oh, wow.
Like, before I make videos, not like I was always getting viral views, but average.
Your engagements were high.
1K, yeah.
Yeah.
But now, I just be like, see TikTok, it tell me, you. Like, TikTok sat me down.
Like, on the Saturday morning.
You left me. I don't know you. Like, I will make, even the video I feel is very, like, I put my work, even if it's probably reused, I put a lot of effort in making sure it's fit for a TikTok screen. You'll be seeing 2 likes, 3 likes. Mm. Yes, I appreciate that at least few people got to see, but I'm like, TikTok.
This was not the vibe I was getting before.
It wasn't this bad. Yeah. Now, it wasn't very popular.
I remember.
It wasn't,
I think you're actually more popular on TikTok than YouTube.
I mean, actually, I'm more popular on YouTube than TikTok right now. Yeah, because...
Oh, right now, okay.
Yeah, because I think I'm in this good relationship with YouTube where it's like, okay, let's keep going gradually. Okay. So I'm hoping I will not take some break and then YouTube will do as if you not know me again. Because I was also on that same vibe with TikTok where I was going gradually. So I think right now it's there, but I have not given up. You know, it's so bad because I will not make any video. I will get 5 new followers.
Mm.
I will not make 1 video. Let me even say 5 people, welcome.
Yeah.
Then I will not lose 10 followers. TikTok, what's up? It's not adding up. So, but that's just the past now. It's not like I don't enjoy posting videos there. It's just the experience recently has been a bit discouraging, but I don't want to give up yet.
Okay. So what's then, your best writing
platform?
Yes, and worst as well.
My best writing platform right now is... So this is kind of a hard choice because I enjoy writing on Free Code Camp and I enjoy writing on my website. If I compare both of them, I mean, I'll choose my website because my website is more about me.
Okay.
The reason why I say my website is because, again, I feel like I'm building this whole profile.
Yeah.
One of the things I used to wish for last year was I want to write so many articles where somebody reaches out to me with a question, I can easily say, I have an article on this.
Yeah.
Like, that's the point I want to get to. So even the basic and the comprehensive stuff, I'm always writing on them.
Mm.
But the reason why it's hard to choose between that and Free Code Camp is when I write on Free Code Camp, like, there's already a guarantee that at least a couple of thousands of people will see this article before some will not want to read it again and some will come back.
Yeah.
But with my personal website, if I not do any promotion, I'm going to go suffer. I mean, few people will see it.
Free Code Camp gives you that audience by default.
Exactly. Yeah. That is why I still enjoy, because I feel when I write articles, I know this is going far and people will learn from it.
Yeah.
As for worst, Medium. I'll say Medium because
like a specific year where people just started to hate them.
Yeah. When I write on Hashnode, I clear few engagements, 2, 3. There's a way Hashnode will just push your content small.
Mm.
On DevTo, something like that. On Medium, even if I share the article, nobody they clap. So is that
the
bad
UX
where
for clapping is actually it got worse.
Yeah. So I think I haven't even bothered about Medium in a while. Like,
okay.
It's only Hashnode. Sometimes I look there. DevTo, sometimes I look there. Well, Medium, nope, not again.
All right. Thank you so much for answering those questions.
Yeah. And then the last personal question, which is not really personal, but you might have to tell us some things that you wouldn't want to tell us in the first place.
It's actually personal.
It's actually quite personal. Okay. So if you were not in tech, right, your parents did not put computer in your house, you didn't get inspired, what would you be doing? What do you think you'll be doing today?
Guy, I'll be dancing.
No way.
No, I literally, there was a point in my life where I thought, like, dancing was my future.
No way.
You know these people now, Ayo and Tio, all these people that used to do reverse and all of this. I don't know if you guys are familiar with.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of dancers.
Jabba Walkie, yeah. All those people.
Jabba Walkie, okay.
I have an Instagram account. I feel like this account will be temporarily locked until I want to show my kids. That account is my dancing.
Please give us the account username for our listeners, please.
It's temporarily locked. That account, I literally, like, I enjoyed dancing and do all the break. Not like I was even that good, but do all the whole break dance. Some of them will make sense. Do some slow motion. Just the.
Oh,
just
wow. I did not know this.
Guy. I mean, on my TikTok, if you go back, you see few dances I did. But nah, those ones, I'm not even so cringed about it. I opened that Instagram account. There is a load of cringe.
I'm very sure our listeners will want to see that Instagram account. So we're going to force it out of video on one of these days. Thank you very much.
I feel like if I didn't like jump into tech, I would have I feel like now I would have come to a point where I now know how to dance. Like I know the moves and everything.
Yeah,
so I feel like I would have really explored that area. But now it's just an area of, you know, my kids, they are the only ones who will see, by God's grace, they are the only ones who will see that account.
I hope they post it. Posting my African dad's TikTok.
They will watch it on my phone. Then I'll tell them to leave. I'll not lock it back.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man. That's we like honest answers on this podcast. Some people don't give us honest answers. But thank you so much, Dillion. Yeah. We've come to the end of the episode. It was really nice having you on the show. We hope to have you back, you know, one of these days. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me. Also, I love spaces like this where I can share things that people can resonate with. And because sometimes we feel like, and this is general in life, not just tech, we feel like we are the only ones experiencing these things alone.
Yeah.
So for me, I use every opportunity to share even personal experiences because I want people to know they are not alone and this is how I figured it out. And maybe my own approach is not the best, but if the fact that you knowing you are not alone gives you peace, then that is already a fulfillment from me sharing it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dillion, once again. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Remember, we release new episodes every other Wednesday, and you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you would love to connect with us, you can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Inside the Techos, or subscribe to our newsletter and shoot us an email at InsideTheTechosystem@gmail.com. We love hearing from our listeners. You can follow the host on Twitter as well, Chuka at CYDUGU and Emmanuel at Olaluwa_98. All right, see you in the next one.